Welcome once again to the program. We kick off another week of Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick, alongside Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart will be with us here in a couple of moments. Coming up on the show in about 5 minutes' time, Matt Nichol, former Maple Leafs strength and conditioning coach, now is the owner and head coach of Paragenic Systems. He'll be aboard in a couple of moments. Rich Peverly, Dallas Stars development coordinator, former NHLer, as well. Cassie Campbell-Pascal will be aboard. We have a look back at Cassie's career, and probably we should talk about the Calgary Flames. If they get this thing going on the ice sometime in, I don't know, throw a dart, August, what are the Flames' chances? And Darren McCarty, host of Grind Time with Darren McCarty, former NHL forward, former Stanley Cup champion. So big show on the horizon. Justin, as we stand by for Stewie, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm very happy to be with you guys today and talk some hockey.
Yeah, it's a nice reprieve from what's been happening stateside after the death of George Floyd, which has dominated headlines, and sports is as much part of culture as things like music and movies. I always make the point that I think there shouldn't be anything in the newspaper called the sports section. It should all be in the entertainment section at times, the business section. We could get into it a little bit later on, specifically when Stewie joins us, but do you have a thought on what we've seen unfold over the past 6 or 7 days? Certainly hitting a fevered pitch over the weekend stateside. I've always said in a situation like this, I don't get a vote. I get to support, and that's what I'm choosing to do. Your thoughts, Justin?
Well, I think it's, you know, what's so great about it is it should beat the complacency out of a lot of people, and that includes myself. It's, you know, there's a lot of frustration and discontentment that's been bubbling below the surface, and sometimes it takes moments like these, weeks like these, for a lot of us to really step back and think about things, and I think it's for the greater good. I certainly have thrown my support behind it, and it's, you know, it's tense times and interesting to keep an eye on. You know, hopefully everyone is safe, and I think by and large the protests have been peaceful, and it's been, you know, I mean, These are crazy times we're living in right now, but that doesn't mean just because we're all locked indoors for the most part that we're supposed to put aside important issues like this.
Certainly true, and we've seen organizations come out with statements about this from the entire sporting world. We've seen leagues themselves come out with statements about it. I think unfortunately, the conversation has turned from the incident from George Floyd being murdered into the reaction to it. And although the point, Justin, I've been trying to make for the past little while is, while you don't necessarily have to condone the nature of the protest, i.e. rioting and smashing of windows and all that, first of all, unfortunate that's dominated the conversation, because the focus should be on the passing of George Floyd and what that means for the African-American community. While you can't condone it, you can certainly understand it. Like, to me, this is, you know, and we've seen this before, this is, you know, eruptions of frustration that aren't just about this one event, but that are decades and generations old. We should not be surprised. And I don't think we have the right to feign outrage when we see these types of reactions, when we see this type of protesting. I don't think as a sane society we should look at that and say, wow, where did that come from? We know where that came from.
Yeah, and it's important not to lose the message, I think. You know, there are, you know, there's some bad people in there, and some opportunistic people, I think, that are not necessarily there for the reasons and the overall arching purpose of the protest. So I think it's important that we focus on them. And if you're going to be outraged about anything, it's, you know, some of the visuals about the way people have been treated, not just during this week, but in months and years prior. I'm a little bit less concerned about Cheesecake Factory being down a couple slices of cherry cheesecake. Yeah.
I'm with you. And it's one of those moments where history forces you to take a side. And I know what side I'm on, Justin. I suspect the same for you and most people listening to this broadcast right now. Again, we hope that everyone stays safe. but I don't think this thing is going to end anytime soon. Okay, more on that a little bit later on. Rich Peverly is still to come here in a couple of moments. Matt Nichol joins us from Paragenix System, Inc. He's the owner and coach at Paragenix, former strength and conditioning coach for, amongst other teams, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Matty, how are you today? Thanks so much for being aboard.
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Fingers crossed, we're trying to get Stewie aboard here. I know you and Stewie are close and go back some years. So, Matty, to kick off the interview, while Stewie's not here right now, what's your best Stewie story?
I've got some great ones that probably aren't fit for consumption on radio, but no, he was, you know what, he was, it was such a pleasure to have him in the gym because he was sort of all rolled into one. He kept the mood light. He was our class clown, but at the same time, you know, he was, you know, some of the strongest lifts I've ever had in the gym. He still got some records. He's unbelievably powerful and fast on the track. So he didn't just joke around. He made the mood light. He always made it fun, but he brought the intensity too.
What was his big? Was it trap bar that he was big on?
Yeah,
was that his?
So I see. I don't need to share his stories. He's already shared them. He was great at the trap bar deadlift. Yeah, he was great on the track, on the sprints. He was good.
That's awesome, Justin. Go ahead. You're on with
powerful,
Matt.
Powerful man.
Matt, I have some very important questions that pertain to NHL players, but more so to myself, because again, I am a selfish person and looking to get answers. during this time that we're all sitting around on our couches, I'm eating just buckets of ice cream, but I'm also running every single day. And, you know, I'm kind of getting fat, Matt. And I wanted to talk about the idea of not being able to out-train a bad diet and how you prioritize sort of nutrition versus exercise.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're alone in that problem, and there's something to be said for mental health. So don't be too hard on yourself. But you know, there's diet is an interesting subject, or nutrition, I should say, is an interesting subject, and there's so many facets to it and nuances, and there's certainly lots of tricks and inside things. But at the end of the day, on a global level, it kind of comes down to calories in versus calories out. So you know, you either have to drop the calories that are going in, or at least drop the bad ones that are going in, and or alternatively, you know, increase your expenditure doing more exercise, or in an ideal world, you do a little bit of both. You could exercise a little better, maybe eat a little better or a little less. That would be kind of the perfect storm.
With Matt Nichol from Paragenix Systems, you work with a number, as we've documented before here on the show, a number of NHLers. As we go through this pause with hockey, with all of sports really right now, what do you advise your clients? Like, they're obviously not, you know, they're not at, you know, Maddie's gym all the time. It's, you know, their garage gym. It's the, you know, going out on the road with their bike or going for a run. Like, how do you, because I remember, Matt, you would always talk about at the end of a season, you should spend the first part of it just recovering. Don't worry about building, just worry about recovering. But this is a unique situation. This is a pause heading into what we think might be, you know, the remainder of the season in playoff format. What do you advise your clients right now? Like, what do you have the guys doing?
That's a great question. So I think it's kind of gone in a few different waves here, where I think at the outset of all this stuff, I actually, you know, I didn't think necessarily it was such a bad thing, because these guys are, you know, they're overtrained and underslept and they're beaten and bruised and they always could use some recovery. So my message early on was to embrace this as an opportunity to kind of get yourself reset, you know, get your body back, get your sleep on track, get your nutrition on track. And then, you know, after a few weeks of that, it would sort of, again, it did a 180, and all of a sudden, I don't think it's just the hockey players, but there was sort of this wave of like, maximize this time and who's going to come out of this as the, you know, as the best version of yourself, and, you know, work out, you know, twice a day, every day, and learn three new languages and learn how to play an instrument and, you know, a million, all this stuff. And I think that was good for a while, because people sort of maybe had a, myself included, thought that maybe this was, you know, maybe it's a 1 month thing, maybe it's a 2 month thing. But I think as that sort of stretched on, the enthusiasm really died off. But now my messaging again has changed, where if you're one of those players that's in, you know, one of these teams that's involved in this 24, you know, team playoff concept, my messaging before was just to, you know, to stay fit. Maybe you do some yoga, maybe it's push-ups, whatever. That's not really enough anymore. You got to get ready for NHL hockey. So before it was sort of, hey, make the best of the bad situation, do the best with what you can, you know, do a chin up off your balcony or whatever the heck it was. Now that's okay, that's not good enough. You actually have to train for NHL hockey.
Okay, so the follow-up then, the obvious one, is if you have clients that aren't part of this 2014 playoff scenario, Buffalo, Ottawa, Anaheim, LA, Detroit, what should those players, or what are those players doing right now? Or is this just recovery time?
No, again, great question and complicated answer. So in a normal world, especially if I knew, okay, the next season won't start conceivably till December, initially right now I would say, hey, you know what? For the last four weeks until we knew how this playoff format would look or if there was going to be a regular season, I was encouraging you to train hard. Well, now if you're a member of one of those seven teams, normally I'd say, well, it's okay. You know what? Take your foot off the gas for a little while and take a break. But where are you going to go on this break? You're still going to be in your condo again for the foreseeable future. So my messaging now has been let's stay the course. We'll try to adjust it to keep it fun and interesting and different, but we're still training hard until maybe they have a chance where they could actually go somewhere. Now, you know, if somebody has a cottage or a vacation home that they can safely go to now, then that might be a different story. Then you know what, get away and do that and take a little break. But I think we're sort of now looking at that long-term view of, okay, you can't keep going at this, you know, in the zone peak intensity from now till December. So we have to maybe include some little breaks along the way.
Matt, where do you, you know, I guess I'll start this by asking, I think people seek you out in different ways. I'm sure there are some individual athletes who seek you themselves. Then there are probably some agents who say, hey, could you work with my guy? Can you tell us about the difference in intrinsic and extrinsic motivation? Like if you have a guy that comes to you that, you know, has been brought there by his agent, are there some players that you struggle to get going? Do you see a difference in these motivation levels? And can you change a guy's work habits if he doesn't come there just ready to self-motivate?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. And, you know, I think that I'm okay with, you know, not everyone has sought me out or done the research and found me of their own accord. That I'm okay with. You know, maybe it's a recommendation from an agent or, you know, from time to time we'll get teams that will send a player specifically. But every once in a while you do come across someone that you just, you know, the gut feel is that they just genuinely kind of don't want to be there. And whether that's they don't want to be with me or whether they just don't want to be doing this type of thing, that's really, really tough to fix. So If I've got a player that is a hardworking person, you know, and this is quite normal. There's guys that I've had guys over the years that, you know, the team or the agent was very frustrated because they weren't working hard in their off-ice training, but I know that this player is a hard-working, dedicated player that loves hockey. Well, that's okay. I can save that one because I just have to – then it's on me to find a way to get them as excited about their training off the ice and make them understand why the training off the ice is going to help them be better at the thing that they already love to do and they already work hard at. But if I get someone who comes in and they – just genuinely aren't a hardworking player and they don't love it. It's not impossible, but it's really hard. And a lot of times we'll have a very, very frank, honest conversation early on where I explain that, you know, I love motivational quotes and, you know, guys chirp me on it because I might be a little over the top. I love that stuff, but you know what? There's no quote or meme or GIF that I can text to you that's all of a sudden going to turn an unmotivated, lazy person into a hardworking, motivated person. It really doesn't work that way, unfortunately. But
with Matt Nichol from Paragenic Systems, Matty, I think have I told you my Jay Harrison Matt Nichol story before?
Me personally, or are we speaking
Have I told you that story before, Matty?
I know. Well, I know that you two had a conversation about. I think it was about me bringing the guys to yoga a million years ago.
It. Yeah, so I'm going to go sort of
around the block. I don't know exactly what he told you. I don't know exactly what he told you, but
I'm going to go around the block here, but trust me, I'm going somewhere with this, Matty. So for those that weren't with the program last time Matt was on, so this would have been, geez, when was Jay with the Maple Leafs? 2005, 2006? And I'm living in
I think even earlier, 2003 or 4 maybe.
Was it? Okay, so 2 or 3. So I'm living in the beaches, and I'm walking down Queen Street near Woodbine, and I bump into Jay Harrison. We have a nice little conversation. He's got a yoga mat in his knapsack. I say, are you going to yoga, Jay? And this is a time where very much yoga was like, okay, guys don't do yoga, guys lift, right? Like, just do like trap bar, right? I'm doing trap bar, I'm doing shoulder press, I'm doing like the big muscles, I'm squat machine, all of it. And he said, yeah, Matt Nichol, who is our strength and conditioning coach for the Maple Leafs, has us doing yoga and it's helping me a ton, but please don't tell anybody that I'm doing this. I really like it, but I just don't want, this is before the big explosion where we all understand how good yoga is for everybody. He's like, it was almost like a less manly thing to do. That was a perception at that time. Is there something now, Matt, that is, you know, this era's version of yoga where it's really beneficial, all the hockey players should do it, all the guys should do it, but they don't want to tell anybody? Is there a new yoga in the hockey world?
You could probably throw meditation, mindfulness training in that. I mean, we do some, I wouldn't say we're religious about it and we don't do it all the time, but we do incorporate elements of Tai Chi and Qigong, which is even probably a further stretch for some of those guys that are the type A alpha male, you know, ego guys, that it's a very different shift in your mindset. But I'd say those things are probably similar. You know, when you talk about people doing meditation, now you think about some guy sitting, in a lotus position in a white room by themselves, that's not what we do, but I think that's the perception. So I think people, when you start talking about anything that borders on the realm of spirituality, even vaguely, I think that scares a lot of people and they get nervous on that. So that could be it.
So then we'll take it to a much more standard form of exercise. I was hoping to get your thoughts on something a lot of us are doing now, which is just running. You know, running was a thing that, you know, I remember my dad, when he played for the Islanders in the 80s, we'd go to our cabin, he'd wake up in the morning, he'd go run 6-7 miles, and, you know, okay, he's done his training for the day. Where are you on running today as a form of exercise, first for professional athletes, but second just for the general population?
Yeah, it's probably like anything else. There's no one right method of exercise, just like there's no one-size-fits-all diet or like just about anything else in life. And, you know, I can tell you my brother was a pretty elite middle-distance runner in high school and has done triathlons and marathons and, you know, has competed and was actually a very competitive 10K runner. That's not my bag. That's not what I'm built for, right? And I think that, so just for the general public, unfortunately, I think there's sort of this is kind of the time of year where, you know, all pandemics aside, all of a sudden, the weather is nice and everyone assumes I have to go be a 5 or 10K runner. And if I can't do that, that means I'm unfit. You know, and if I've been sitting on my butt all winter and I go for a 30-minute jog and the next day my knees or my back are sore, well, that just means I'm old and washed up and I'm out of shape. And that's just not true. And I think that I would never condemn running as a form of exercise because I think some people it is great for, and they get a lot of enjoyment from it. I've never experienced that runner's high that everyone keeps talking about. So maybe someday I will, and I hope it's awesome, but I've personally never felt that. But if we're speaking specifically about athletes, I think it would depend on the sport. And in the case of hockey, I would argue that, you know, maybe for your dad doing it with the Islanders at a time when a lot of guys weren't doing much of anything, probably doing anything would have set you apart from the guys that weren't doing as much of anything. And I think it certainly has some benefit, aerobic benefit, but hockey really is an intermittent speed and power sport. So it's very short, explosive bursts of power. So running wouldn't be the most, effective or specific thing that they can do. And for some guys, you know, Stewie's a great example. There's that guy's a, 100 meter dash, middle linebacker, power forward kind of guy. It's not really optimal for him, you know, as a hockey player.
Speaking of Anthony Stewart, he does join the broadcast now. Stewie, we're just spending the first 5 minutes of the interview talking about your trap bar exploits. Do you have anything further to add?
Well, speaking of running, I just got back from a run. That's why I'm late. And Maddie told me that he was going to be doing an online body fat test. So I was trying to get in prime shape. So that's why I'm late. But so the trap bar, I'm not sure if the record was going to be beaten. And again, I had a couple back injuries and I think I could have got up to 600 pounds, but 500 pounds was good enough. And it's funny. There was this one kid that he was a young college guy that was going for my record. And I was just trying to get in his head and psych him out. So I gave him the nickname Brock Lesnar. So every morning he'd come to the arena. I'd be like, Brock Lesnar, you think you're going to beat my record today? You better be mistaken. So as much as weightlifting is a physical exercise, when you're in competition, it's also a mental battle as well.
Shout out to Austin McKay, because that's who it was. But no, Anthony, and that was, it was funny because we would have a little bit of back and forth. I wouldn't let Anthony. Anthony definitely could have done 600, but I wouldn't let him go much heavier than that because, you know, at the end of the day, you don't get paid to do deadlifts. You get paid to play hockey. So we kind of found that optimal level of strength and left it alone.
Yeah, and the one thing, sorry to interrupt, the one thing I could say is with Maddie, like with me during the summers, I had to lose a bunch of weight and Maddie would go through his exercises and go through the process, and he would say, hey, when you're here, you're going to hit your weight goals. Just trust me. If you want to go home and run 1,000 laps around your kitchen, yeah, do that. But when you're here, just trust me. So I actually hit my weight goals probably 6 weeks before training camp. So I think the message to the other NHL teams is you can't just have a generic training plan for every player. You know, you got to have a specific plan for every player if you want to have success, you know, in the fitness department.
Who, Stewie, just hang on. Maddie's gonna stay on the phone here, and you're gonna gush about him, and Maddie's gonna blush. But I mean, you talk to people that have that Matt's worked with, and you start to see how profound an effect they had, not just on their bodies, but on their lives. And Stewie, you've talked about this before, about people whose advice you listen to, and it's more than just okay, yeah, you know what, something's weird when I do my lat raises or shoulder presses, and so Maddie's correcting me on that. This is more like life stuff. Like, Stewie, how much is Matt involved in like the whole person, not just these certain body parts?
Yeah, and I think that's what sets him apart, you know, from all the other trainers, where he genuinely cares. He cares not just about you, the player, but the person. And when you have someone that's going to, you know, that's in your corner like that, like he's, you know, he's told some teams where to go because he believes in that player. And I was a player that I had one bad weigh-in when I was 21 years old. And that bad weigh-in, you know, followed my career for 6-7 years. But as soon as they found out that I was training with Matt Nichol, I never had any more weight issues again because they said, hey, you know what? His reputation is that pristine in the hockey world. Hey, he's in good hands. So that just speaks paramount of how good of a trainer he is. But for me, it was the chats, you know, coming in the morning time, doing the stretches and just psyche. Hey, we know you don't have a deal, but control what you can control, getting in good shape and stuff like that. So, you know, prime example from a fitness aspect, he's the best in the business. And rest in peace, Ray Emery. You know, he brought him back from double Bo Jackson surgery. And when I hear people that are injured now, and I'm like, if someone can come back from two torn hips, you can come back from whatever you have if you go and train with the right people. And Matt Nichol is one of those guys. And I'm happy to call him not just my trainer, but, you know, my close personal friend.
How you doing, Matt?
That means a lot. you made my day. Although, admittedly, the bar's a little low these days, but hey, you made my day. Thank you. That really means a lot. That means more than any of your accomplishments.
That's awesome. Maddie, unfortunately, we're out of time. Listen, thanks so much for popping by. Much appreciated. We're always in touch. The door is always wide open for you here on this program. So please, whenever you want to enter, just give us a holler. It's always been good catching up. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
Amazing. Great to hear your voices, guys.
There he is, Matt Nichol from Paragenics. And according to Anthony Stewart, he invented oxygen as well. I didn't know that. That's good news, Stewie. Maddie there just a second ago, Stewie talked about how before he came on. And by the way, good afternoon, Stewie. Good to catch up with you. He was talking about how he loves motivational quotes. And even though there's no motivational quote that's going to get someone really, you know, off the couch and turn into, you know, Tyler Seguin, it's still something that means something to him. Do you remember Maddie in the gym coming around with motivational quotes or energizing things to stay for Ace Stu?
Yeah, for sure. And he has it on his wall, and it says, "Character is what you do when no one's watching," and that just sums it up. You know, in what you need to do to be an NHL hockey player. A lot of people now are posting stuff for Instagram, but what are you doing when the cameras aren't on? And that just shows how humble Maddie is. He's the most humblest guy in the world, where he'll give you the shirt off his back. You know, I've had some trainers, you know, come by and, you know, T.R. Goodmans of the world, which motivates you in a different way, calling you a jag. You're just another guy. But Matty Nichol, he doesn't just train you, but he believes in you. And every single player that, you know, he trains, he believes in his heart that they can be successful NHL hockey players, and he'll do whatever it takes to help them find that success.
We thank Matt Nichol. We thank Matt Nichol for stopping by the program from Paragenics. We'll step away. We come back. Rich Peverly, Dallas Stars Player Development Coordinator. We'll get on the Stars page here in a couple of moments. Also, still to come, hour two, Cassie Campbell-Pascal will be aboard, as will Darren McCarty. It's a big show. Thanks so much for joining us today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hockey Central continues in moments. Keep it here. Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central on the air, Monday to Friday, noon to 2. Thanks for joining us today. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Still to come, Cassie Campbell-Pascal from the NHL on Sportsnet. Have a look back at her very successful career, which, as an aside, should somewhere lead to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Darren McCarty will join us as well, former Detroit Red Wing, former Stanley Cup champion, and joining us now, he's a former NHLer, now the Dallas Stars Player Development Coordinator. Rich Peverly joins us on Hockey Central. Rich, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
The pleasure is ours. And just right off the bat, the most important thing is, how are you? How is your family? How is everyone in your bubble?
Yeah, we're doing great. It's every day's trying to find different challenges. You know, I have three kids at home, so trying to get some schoolwork done. But luckily, the weather's been nice, and we're able to get out, and that's been, I think, saving grace.
The one thing about homeschooling kids, the one thing that it's taught me, Rich, is that I'm a really bad math teacher, like a horrible math teacher. God bless my wife for being able to step in. What have you learned about teaching kids?
Patience. yeah, it's been lots of angry moments at times, but lots of patience. But like you, I had a subtraction question on Friday, and I couldn't figure out how to do something. I it was like the most simple question in the world for grade two math, and I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah,
I think it was Friday, and it was the end of the week at the same time. So
yeah, pretty big club, and it's growing. Don't feel like you're on an island, Rich. Stewie, go ahead. You're on with Rich Peverly.
Hey, Rich, how's it going, buddy? How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. So how is it communicating now with the prospects during the the pandemic? Are you actually having exit meetings with them? Are you giving them summer plans on what to do regards to working out? And how has that communication been with them now in these unusual circumstances?
Well, I think different players are in different set of circumstances. We had, you know, junior players and college players that knew their seasons were finished. They could start, you know, their summer training, take a few weeks off. But then I think for the AHL players, finally hearing about a week ago, that they were able to, they knew their season was done and they were able to start their summer training. I think that's been nice for them, just to kind of get that off their shoulders. Some will probably take a break and then get into their summer training. The hard part is the skating. You know, there's not a lot of places in Ontario, but, you know, in Europe they're able to skate, and some places in the United States are able to skate. So some players are finding it hard without the skating part, but it's been good. There's also the other group that, you know, there's about a few junior players, I'm sure, from most NHL clubs, and then there's going to be a handful of players that, you know, if the NHL goes, will be with the big clubs. So those guys are the ones that are going to have to be really prepared.
Justin?
So, Rich, what will your role look like over the coming months here? I know it's sort of a difficult time, and no one exactly knows what's going to happen, but what do you expect your role to look like over the coming months at the Stars?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure, and it's kind of slowly changing. Obviously, we were able to do a lot over the phone and Zoom calls and keeping up with players, but in terms of traveling to the United States right now, obviously you can't do that. So I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen for myself, but you know, as long as we can still keep in communication with players, and you know, maybe we'll be able to start seeing guys if it's there around your community. I live in Guelph, so you know, we have a fair amount of players that are training around in this area. So hopefully I'll be able to maybe get on ice with guys, maybe specific one-on-one or in groups of three or four eventually, and I think that would be kind of nice.
Being joined by Rich Peverly, he works with the Dallas Stars, certainly former NHLer, we all know that. Now the Dallas Stars Player Development Coordinator, and one of the players, you know, that we're going to see with the Dallas Stars eventually, and probably sooner than later, a former first-round draft pick. I live in Stouffville, so I'd see him skate last summer here locally at Clippers Arena. And that's a title, Andrea. Mickey Renaud, Captain's Trophy winner this year with the Flint Firebirds of the OHL. You know, when you look at, you know, we saw him with the junior, like when you look at what this guy brings as far as a complete package. And I remember the first time I met him at the prospects game, he just walked up, introduced himself and just started talking. And I was thinking to myself, you know, this kid's 17, but it feels like he's 25 or 26 years old. Like he already feels like he's a veteran hockey player. Give us Rich Peverly's take on Tidal, Andrea.
I love the kid. He comes from a great family. His parents are very involved and really, really nice people. You know, for Ty, it's on the ice. Off the ice, I don't worry. He's almost like, for a guy in my position, he's an easy player to deal with. He's already committed. He's already eating healthy. It's all about his getting better every day, and that's the best part about what I do is seeing guys like that. And it's enjoyable to see the guys that you have to change, but it's also nice and refreshing to have work with players that are already on the right development path. On the ice, he's incredibly two-wayed. He'll play hard. He'll go through the puck as he's got his nose over the puck. He's great on faceoffs. I think one game this year he took 60-something faceoffs in an OHL game. He's tremendous on his faceoffs. He's really improved his skating, which has been kind of something we've been on him to work on, and he's been improving that. But I think the most important thing this year for him, in my opinion, was he really blossomed in his offensive capabilities. He really, I think, once he got named to that World Junior team, it was just like, okay, wow, I'm going to take this to another level. And he was at 1.3 points a game in the O, and he was unstoppable. So he's a treat to work with and a great player as well.
Stewie?
Rich, what's your message to maybe the undrafted players that are in your organization that were drafted late? Because you were a guy that played probably 250 games in the minors before you got your shot at the NHL. So what's your message to those young guys that are looking to climb the depth chart within an organization?
Well, I think, Stewie, you've been through this, and it's a process, and it's never going to be easy. It's something that I think players, when they get drafted, they feel like they've accomplished it already, and they really haven't accomplished anything. It's a step, and you should be congratulated on that, but then it's a step. But then there's all these other guys that are coming up behind these players that if they don't work harder than those other players coming up behind them, they're going to get passed. And one thing I've kind of enjoyed on Twitter in the past couple weeks is the NHL, or people put out the draft rankings, or the final draft selections from each year, and then they redraft on who was the best. And it really, yeah, you're going to get your top guys that are always going to be really, really good, but then there's this whole cluster of other guys that are drafted later or not drafted at all. And those are the guys that find a way, and they work harder than everybody, and they push themselves, and then they get rewarded. And that's what it is. It's small steps, but you got to keep getting better and better and better and evolving.
Justin?
Rich, I was wondering about your own career, looking through your, your climb to the NHL today. I was someone who spent some time in the minors and never played in the NHL, so I wanted to get a sense for your mindset as you went from being a college hockey player to an eventual longtime NHLer. When you were moving up through the ranks, did you kind of feel like you just wanted to play at the next level? Were you focused on where you were? Or did you the whole time have this belief that the NHL was your goal, that you were good enough, that you'd get there eventually?
I think that's a really good question, because it's something I constantly thought about. I was playing U.S. college at St. Lawrence, and I saw players getting drafted at the time that I was playing against. Patrick Sharp was at Vermont, and Dominic Moore was at Harvard, and Chris Higgins was at Yale, and they were really good players, but I didn't think they were that much better than me. And So I just kind of, whenever I saw someone get drafted or played ahead of me, I was like, okay, I got to beat this guy, or I got to challenge this guy. And I kind of took that mindset everywhere I went. Like when I went to the East Coast to get out of college, it was like, okay, I'm not thinking about the NHL. I'm thinking about being the best player on my East Coast League team. And then I'm hoping that I get a chance up. And then when I finally got to Milwaukee, after being given a shot, I was on a team with Scotty Upshaw and Jordan Tutu, Shea Weber, Pekka Rinne, like great NHLers. But I got there and I was like almost surprised myself. I'm like, hey, I'm just as good as these guys. So once I got to that level, I was like, okay, Scotty Upshaw is going up and down to the NHL. Well, he's not that much better than me, or you know, maybe I can get better than him. So that was kind of something I pushed, and we had a really good group in Milwaukee that really pushed each other, led by Claude Noel, and we just kept pushing each other, and it was a really good group of people. And you know, I was lucky enough; Nashville gave me an opportunity, got my foot in the door, because if a lot of teams, they only give opportunities to drafted players, and Nashville was one of those teams that, you know, Joel Ward got a chance, Dan Ellis got a chance, Vern Fiddler got a chance. They gave chances to players, and I'm lucky that they gave a chance to me.
And next thing you know, you're winning a Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins in 2011, in one of the more impressive teams that we've seen in the last number of years in the NHL. That was, you know, we've during this, you know, pause for hockey, you know, you mentioned, you know, all the redrafting and where does this guy go and where does that guy go. You know, it's been an interesting time too, because everybody's going back and looking at various Stanley Cup finals and what the stories were, and now that we have, you know, greater historical perspective over a lot of them tend to come into a sharper focus. When you look back at the Boston Bruins and the Vancouver Canucks Stanley Cup final, specifically Game 7, and we all know what happened after the game. I was trying to get from the CBC building back to the hotel, and I think it took like 2.5 hours. Me and Scotty Morrison going through, you know, the riots and the fights and the fires and all of it. What do you remember from that day specifically, from, you know, from getting to the rink to leaving the rink when you guys won the Stanley Cup?
I remember we kind of changed our routine, I think, going into Game 7. I think we had, in previous days leading up or games, we had flown in the day before and not skated and just kind of went in and played an after. At that time, it was an afternoon game. It was a 5 o'clock Pacific time, but 8 o'clock Eastern. So
yep.
For Game 7, we flew in the day before and we practiced right away. And that kind of just did. Everyone kind of felt a little sluggish, I think, every time we went out there. And I think that kind of got our legs underneath us. And I think that really prepared us. But the one thing I really remember, and this is kind of odd, is I woke up and I was sitting there with David Krejci, who was my roommate. And I turned the TV on and I put on the score, the old channel, the score.
Yeah.
And they had the odds up for the game and what the odds were like. And the odds were terrible in our favor. And obviously, you know, we had won a game there. And that kind of fueled me. And I was telling Dave and I was telling guys in the dressing room when we got there, like, hey, they're not giving us any chance. Like, you know, so I think that fueled a lot of guys, obviously playing in a Canadian city too. It was pretty special to win there. But I think with, you know, I rewatched it actually for the first time. And I have to say Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron on that game and Zdeno Chara were outstanding. And,
go ahead.
No, I was just saying their performances, I think, just propelled us. They were great. And
Tim Thomas was all-world as well, like one of the command performances in that of that generation. What was the room like before the game? Like, I think of, like, you know, mentioned Bergeron, you mentioned Chara. Like, you have, you know, Lucic and Horton, and you mentioned Krejci and Ferentz and, you know, yourself. And, like, you've got, like, really strong leadership-type players. What was the room like? Like, was there a nervous energy or was it calm?
That was our third Game 7, I think, of the playoffs. So I think the nerves were obviously a little bit higher because it was the Stanley Cup final. But the presence in there, you had Mark Recchi that had been in Stanley Cup finals. He had won 2 cups. Andrew Ferentz had been to a Stanley Cup final with Calgary. Even like Thomas Caberle, it was a great leader, like in his own way. And we had a lot of good leaders, and I think it really calmed the nerves of a lot of the younger guys. But, you know, we went out there with confidence. And I think once we scored that first goal, it was like, okay, maybe it's like we're back in Boston again. Let's keep it going here. And I think that first goal, like in a lot of playoff series, once you get that first goal, it's huge. It really changes the mindset of a team.
Stewie?
You know, obviously we talk about roster construction, especially the Toronto Maple Leafs. What made that roster of that Boston team so special? I know you guys had guys like that yourself. That was a good two-way player. Guys like Daniel Paille. I remember Greg Campbell probably blocking 16 shots in one shift, breaking his whole body. So can you talk a little bit about that roster construction and not just having the emphasis on skill, but having, you know, role players and guys that play the role to a T?
Yeah, I think, Stewie, I think for myself, fitting into that lineup, it was a lot of heavier players. Lou Cheech Horton, and I think I kind of complemented that skill set of the group. But I think, like you said, I think the role, the players on every single line, on every single defense pairing played a role in us winning. If it wasn't Game 7, I think our fourth line of Campbell, Thornton, and Paille, they created so much energy. And we still talk about it to this day on how important that first period was from what they brought. And, you know, I think I was playing with Chris Kelly and Michael Ryder, and we really helped get us through the first round against Montreal. And obviously David Krejci was an outstanding playoff performance, and then obviously Bergeron and Marchand. But our defense, everybody seemed to step up. And I think when you win, everyone has to contribute, but they realize the role that they have. And if everyone goes in and not expecting to play higher up the lineup, but understanding their role and accepting their role, then I think everybody strives to be the best in that role. Then I think you're just going to have a really good chance to win, because nobody's trying to out getting somebody, getting the lineup higher or whatever. And everyone's just striving towards the same goal.
So then where do you stand on internal competition versus sort of accepting your role? Because, you know, you mentioned before, like, in trying to come up through the ECHL, it's like, all right, I got to be the best guy in this team. And in the minors, your biggest competition is the guys in your own dressing room. There's no doubt about that. I imagine that changes when you get to the NHL to some degree, but it's still healthy to have some level of that internal competition. I guess, how does that play out on a National Hockey League team? How important is internal competition versus just accepting your role?
I think it's a delicate probably the line that you got to dance. You know, I was still striving to get up the lineup and play another in the top two line role when I was in Boston. But you know, I also accepted at the time, I'm like, okay, I'm going to play third line here with Chris Kelly, and we're really going to try to maybe be the best line. And I remember there was times that my second year in Boston, I was playing with Chris Kelly and Pouliot, and we were scoring every game. And Claude Julien just came in and said, "You guys are starting because you're basically the first line right now." So, you know, I think you strive to be better than the players you're on. But I think everyone is graceful to each other and nice to each other, that you're able to get along and push each other, but also mm-hmm. be understanding that, you know, we're only going to get better if everybody competes and tries to outcompete each other. So, you know, it's definitely a delicate line that you got to dance, but you know, you got to be able to push each other, I think, for sure.
With Rich Peverly here on Hockey Central, the Jay Bouwmeester incident this year, I think, frightened everybody. Everybody watching that, much like your incident when you played with Dallas in that game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. I can recall watching that game and being horrified, Rich. There's something that I always whisper to myself every now and then, just as a reminder about appreciating things. And it's, we're all born with two lives, and our second life begins when we realize we only have one. And you had that sort of profound situation happen to you. And it's been some time now. How did that change you, your viewpoint? How did all of that change Rich Peverly and turn him into the person we're talking to today?
Oh, it definitely changed me. You know, I realized that I love the game, and, you know, you realize the things that you do love, you know, your family and my passion for playing the game, but also being involved in the game. It also just makes you think sometimes, like, you know, if you're, this might sound weird, but if you're going to go make a purchase, or if you want to go on a vacation, which obviously we can't do now, but, certain things, and you're like, well, what are we waiting for, and why do we work, and it makes you have these internal questions where you're like, well, don't have any more regrets. Like, you never know when, unfortunately, yeah. You know, something can happen to someone, and I'm an example of that, but I've kind of tried to live my life a little differently lately, well, since that incident, and, you know, I don't regret the way I lived before, but like you said, I think it's those moments that make you realize and appreciate that you only have one life.
Well said. Rich, we thank you for your time today. Listen, continued success with the Dallas Stars. Hey, real quick, Dallas going into the playoffs, if they get this thing on the ice, I know we've talked a lot, you know, this year about the other 34 in the NHL, Denis Gurianov, like from Dallas's point of view, you know, who will you, in your role with the Stars, have your eyes on most on that Dallas team should this playoff get underway?
Obviously, I think the goaltending has been outstanding for the past few years in Dallas. It's not really something I worry about. But I think, like you said, I think the younger guys, you know, you get what you're going to expect from Tyler. And I think Jamie Benn's turned into quite a playoff performer when he wants to dial it up. But I think it's the make or break, and it's usually the guys, like Stewie said, it's the role players that make a difference. And, you know, we have quite a few of those, I think, but also some younger guys that are coming up, like the Denis Gurianovs or the Radek Foxes, and these are the type of guys that are going to help change a series. And hopefully, you know, we're able to play and we're able to get some competition, and Dallas can go on a run, because it would be it's always enjoyable to see the players that you work with be successful.
A single shot away from knocking off the team that would go on to win the Stanley Cup. If only Andrew Cogliano, right? You think back to last season, and why not, yeah. Dallas? Rich, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for stopping by today. Continued success, and look forward to catching up down the road.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
There is Rich Peverly, who works with the Dallas Stars in a pretty interesting role. He is the Stars Player Development Coordinator. That's got to be a pretty interesting role as well, because you're working with in one sense, you know, a lot of kids, as you mentioned, Peverly had a really successful NHL career. Like, I look at Rich Peverly and I say to myself, like, that is a guy perfectly suited for that role, but you would know him much better than I would. Why does Peverly work in that role for Dallas?
Because he genuinely cares. He's one of those guys that he went through it. He had to do it the hard way. He wasn't a high draft pick. He went to college. He started off in the East Coast League. Not a lot of guys start the East Coast League and make their way up to the NHL. So he has that experience of, hey, you know, a lot of these people in the role they haven't been in the exact same spots that he has. So he can tell you exactly how to do it. And with him, he played the game the right way. And I was a first-round draft pick. I was a junior star. But I didn't play the game the right way. Rich Peverly played the right way. That's why he had a better career than I did. Great two-way player, great teammate, but overall great person. That's why he had a successful NHL career, and that's why he's perfect for the role that he's in.
Justin, you have a quick final thought on Rich Peverly?
Yeah, I love the thing he said about sort of looking at guys on your own team and saying, I'd be better than him. Like, that was something that was a part of my summer training, was like I think particularly of another right winger on my college team. You know, I spent an entire summer, it was the best training summer I had, where I just, every day I focused on this one guy, because there was one spot on my team that was going to be on the right wing, first line power play, you know, with the better players. I thought about this guy every day. I don't think he knows that, to be honest.
Did you put his picture up in the gym every time you're working out?
But that was it. It was on the inside of my head. That one more set was like, he's not doing that one more set. And I think that motivation is something that people who just follow hockey don't realize how much of your competition is internal. Your own teammates are the guys you got to be better than until you get there.
And I also did the same thing, but I set the bar too high. I thought I was better than Sidney Crosby. So. So that was my issue.
Well, you got to play.
And I remember good, man. Kirk Muller, and I remember sitting in Kirk Muller's office, like, Stewie, if you think you're going to be a skilled guy, you're going to be out of the league in 2 years. I'm like, yeah, right, Kirk. Sure enough, in 2 years, I was out of the league.
But you got to play with Sidney Crosby and win a gold medal at Grand Forks with Sidney Crosby. It's got to count for something.
I wasn't even close. Not even close.
Okay. We'll step away. Hockey Central continues. Hour two is coming up. Darren McCarty joins us, and Cassie Campbell-Pascal as well. Plenty to get to. Thanks for joining us today. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Stewart and Justin Bourne. I'm Jeff Merrick. Hour two is on the horizon. Before we get there, I want to thank our guests for joining us in hour one. Rich Peverly, Dallas Stars Player Development Coordinator. He talked to us about the Stars and winning the Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins in 2011. Matt Nichol kicked off the program from Paragenic Systems, talking about hockey players and what they should be doing during a pandemic, whether they are poised to play perhaps in August or not playing until, yikes, next December. Hour two is coming up. We'll be greeted by Cassie Campbell-Pascal from the NHL on Sportsnet. Have a look back at her storied career. We should sneak in something about the Hockey Hall of Fame as well, and also her thoughts on the Calgary Flames heading into the playoffs, should they get underway later on this summer. And Darren McCarty will join us, host of Grind Time with Darren McCarty, former NHL forward and Stanley Cup champion. Big hour two. Glad you're with us. Stay tuned. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Brian Burke, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hour two of Hockey Central. Cassie Campbell-Pascal stops by here in a couple of moments. Darren McCarty towards the bottom of the hour. Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Stewie, to kick off the program in hour one, Justin and I shared our thoughts over what we've seen over the past 6 or 7 days, just after the death of George Floyd, and everything that has happened subsequent to it. The point from my perch as a, you know, middle-aged white person is that, and we've talked about this before, in this, I don't get the vote, I get to support, and that's what I'm doing. And even though some of the coverage of the events happening stateside have shifted away from the death of George Floyd where they shouldn't, and have shifted into the rioting and the looting and the sensational stuff that we see on television, the point that I've been trying to stress is, even though we can't necessarily condone what we see, I don't think we can be surprised by it when you have a group of people that stretch, and their oppression stretches back decades, if not generations, and there's that feeling of frustration and feeling of helplessness. We shouldn't be surprised that this is the end result. So those who are just not with us in hour one, that's my nickel and dime thoughts on this one. What went through your head as you saw all this unfold in dramatic fashion over the weekend?
Yeah, it was definitely very traumatic just watching the marches and the looting and everything like that. But with this situation now, I don't really have the answers, but you know, they've tried to march peacefully, they've tried to kneel, they've tried to get their message across over these last, you know, little bit, and to no avail. So I don't have the answers, but we can't really tell them what to do. But, you know, when this issue came up earlier on in this hockey season, you know, I was saying this is not a hockey issue, this is a society issue. And there is, in this society today, people are treated differently based on their race, their sexuality, and that's how it is. You know, it's funny, I was talking to Matt Nichol last night, and he's like, I wish I could say something to show my support. I'm like, Matty, you don't have to say anything. You've shown it with your actions the last 10 years that I've known you, and not treating me any differently, mentoring me, trying to make me the best person that I can be personally. So you don't have to say anything. I believe in you and what your actions are. So it's great that everyone's speaking and tweeting about the cause, but I hope everyone now shows it now that this is unacceptable with what's going on in society with their actions. And you know, a lot of people are tweeting about it, but, you know, in a couple months here, when I'm coming out asking, you know, hey, would you like to support a free house league, or would you like to support inner city kids playing hockey to make hockey more accessible and affordable, so now you can have more minorities in the NHL or playing this great game of hockey? That's sort of where you can now support with your actions. So, you know, with regards to the racism in hockey, don't ask me, don't ask my brother, don't ask Wayne, ask Willie O'Ree, ask Mike Marsden, ask, you know, Val James, who had it. That was real, real systemic racism in hockey and what they had to go with. So I feel grateful that I haven't had to deal with it personally, but this is a society issue, and it has a trickle-down effect into sports. So I don't have the answers, but I'm doing my best, and in 10 years when hopefully there's 10, 15 hockey players can say, hey, you know what, Anthony Stewart made a difference, and the people around him made a difference in making me a more successful person in life.
Great comments. Great words again, Stewie. Thanks for all of that, and we echo all of it and continue to support it. Cassie Campbell-Pascal joins us now from the NHL on Sportsnet, and Cassie, want to get your thoughts here on the Calgary Flames in a couple of moments, but also, since you do sit on the selection committee for the Hockey Hall of Fame, and no one's gathering in any boardrooms anytime soon, Zoom calls to decide who's going into the Hockey Hall of Fame. That's a new one, hey?
Yeah, I guess it is. you know, it's just kind of the reality we're in. But I think obviously the importance of having a group this year and making sure that the process is still intact, I think, is important. And, you know, last year was my first year, and I walked into that room of great hockey men. And I can tell you as a woman, and I heard you guys talking about race before I was coming on, and I know there's a slight difference when it comes to racism and sexism. But as a woman, I walked into that room full of men, and I felt completely supported. And everyone came and shook my hand and welcomed me, and so that was really exciting to be part of that group. And I can just tell you that it was a thorough process. It's not an easy process because there's just so many great people that can be in every single year, but it's a thorough process, and it's just really fun to be part of it. And unfortunately, that's really all I can say. As you know, Jeffrey, like I'm sworn to secrecy, and there's confidentiality agreements. It was really, really fun to do it. It's one of the greatest things I've ever had happen to me in hockey, and it's really exciting to be part of that group.
Yeah, I know I'm not getting anything out of you, Campbell. Like, I know that
I know.
I'm not going to be able
to. I apologize.
But let me ask you one thing, because I mean I vote for awards, and I know sort of what my preparation for it and sort of how much I go through to sort of decide on some names. And that's just, I'm just like a tiny little one vote for a certain amount of trophies in the NHL. But I mean, this is the Hockey Hall of Fame. Like, I can only, I know you can't talk about the people that you vote on, can't betray any of that, but can you share with us what sort of process of evaluation you go through? Because I know that nothing you do is trivial or frivolous. And I would imagine that voting on someone going into the Hockey Hall of Fame, you share that and you take in that same enthusiasm and work ethic that you did when you were a player.
You know, all I can really say is it's a thorough process, and everyone does their homework and everyone does their research, and they don't just show up and, you know, I'm part of this and this is a fun thing. And they take it very seriously. And I think that's kind of what impressed me the most last year was I think from the outside looking in, you have this impression it's just a group of men who sit around and drink beer and then debate. You know, I mean, that's not it at all. There's no beer involved, that's for sure. And I think, you know, everyone comes well prepared. And that's kind of really all I can say. And I can just say that it's a thorough process. And the debate is huge. The debate is real. And, you know, you leave that room feeling you've done everything you can to make the best selections possible.
Okay, and so while I've got you, let me make the case for Lauren Chabot. Okay, no, never mind. We'll turn it over to Anthony Stewart. Go ahead, Stewie.
There's a bit of uncertainty at the pro level in the women's game right now. How do you envision it in 5 years down the line?
You know what, Anthony, I envision it us having a WNHL, much like the WNBA. And, you know, up until this point, you know, we still continue not to have a professional women's hockey league. We've never had one, and there still isn't one that exists. And I think that's kind of been my fight along with so many other players. And now you're finally seeing that the current players believe in the same thing. And, you know, they're willing to give up their careers essentially, or put their careers on hold to not play in a league last year that existed. And they're willing to do it again this year and probably willing to do it again the following year. And I think they just want an infrastructure like the NHL that will make the women's game sustainable, will make it a true professional league where, you know, players can make a decent salary. But it's not even really about that, Anthony. I mean, my generation played, you didn't get paid much. You know, this generation, you know, they don't get paid much. They're used to just playing for the love of the game, but it's about making sure that you have the proper infrastructure and you have a full-time dressing room where you can leave your equipment overnight. And, you get access to sticks and you get access to tape and you get access to a skate sharpener. I mean, these are things that are, you know, midget AAA boys hockey teams have access to. And so I think this group of women, you know, people know that I've been fighting for it pretty much since I've retired. But it couldn't just be my voice or a select few voices. It really needed to start coming from the current players. And so finally last year after the Canadian Women's Hockey League folded, I think they just had enough. And they started to educate themselves. And so they've started the PWHPA and they are together and they're united. And it's all the best players from all around the world. And they're fighting for what they believe in, and that they think a sustainable future is the WNHL. And I see it happening, you know, within the next couple of years or so. And, you know, COVID has kind of set us back just a little bit. I think there was going to be some really exciting news coming out and around playoff time in June, the end of playoffs for women's hockey when it came to the NHL. And, you know, COVID has kind of set everything back. You know, as you can imagine, their focus has just been getting their own system back and playing. But I believe they believe in women's hockey. I think they believe it's an important part of the future for them, and I'm a big proponent of that.
Cassie, I do want to get to your wonderful career as a player and a broadcaster, but this is really interesting, and I know there is an existing women's league. What are the roadblocks right now to getting the game to where you see it in a couple years down the road? I know COVID has obviously not helped things, but if you just help us sort of better understand what hurdles have to be cleared to get where many people, where it should be.
Well, I got to point a little bit of a finger at the NHL, and, you know, I've been fortunate to be in some behind the scene meetings and behind the scene conversations. And I know that there's at least 10 NHL teams that want a women's team. You know, I think the structure will be a lot smaller than that. And so I think to some degree, we all know it's going to happen. The WNHL is inevitable. And so I think to some degree, that question needs to be asked to Gary and to his staff. Like, when is this going to happen? And that's never really been asked. People say, oh, so what about women's hockey? And then he gives his answer. And I think it's time that we ask that same question, Justin, to him directly on a regular basis. And I know I ask it, and I'm lucky enough to be in with conversations with him, and we can be honest to each other. But yeah, that when is it going to happen? What are the roadblocks? And I think initially there was a feeling that one league, when there was two leagues, there was a feeling that one league wasn't in it for the right reason and had the idea to go after the NHL for money. And I think that kind of scared them a little bit, and rightfully so. And I think that hurdle has now been passed, and I don't think it's so much of an issue. And in the United States, there's antitrust laws and there's different things. And but I really don't think there's a league now that stands in the way of the WNHL. And maybe in the past couple of years that was sort of what was going on. But you know what? I think that's a question that needs to be asked more of. I think everyone kind of knows and watches the product and knows we're ready. You know, we've seen a few things at the All-Star Game, you know, that have been great and wonderful showcases over the last couple of years for women's hockey. But I think it's now time just to take it to the next level. And I think, to be honest with you, I think they are working behind the scenes and do care about it. But, you know, when is it going to happen? And that's a question, unfortunately, Justin, that I can't answer.
You know, when it does happen, Cassian, you've been always someone that's always deferred praise to someone else. I mean, you've never been someone who's been quick to take a bow. That's not Cassie Campbell-Pascal. You've always talked about the shoulders that you sat on when you grew up and the influences that you had in the women's game. But if I could get you to talk about yourself honestly, Cassie, for a second, how much... I mean, I know you don't like doing victory laps, but you look at your generation of players. Like, that's that was a real growing moment for the women's game. You and I have talked before about what that Salt Lake game did for the women's game, et cetera, what 98 meant for the women's game. I mean, how much would you and your colleagues from that era, whose teams you played on, and people who you detested playing against, but then post-career all worked together for one goal. I mean, how much of a sense of accomplishment will that be for you and your colleagues from that time in the game?
You know, it would be amazing. You know, it's interesting, Jeff. This unfortunately, this past week, that group, we got together on email, and the reason we got together was we lost a great man who supported us and was the former CEO of Molson, Dan O'Neill. Mm-hmm. And he passed away a couple of weeks ago, and so we put together a tribute video for him. And, you know, it was just amazing to catch up and to connect with that group. And then as I'm sending out the email to them, and I'm going through the list of players who were on that team and that generation, and I think about that generation, and I think I was just so lucky to be part of that group, because that group was sort of the last group that understood what the Souchiers and the Franz St. Louis and the Stacey Wilsons were about, and the Shirley Camerons, and, you know, names that maybe not everyone knows in the hockey world, but that was the last group that was still connected to that, the tradition. And so I think it would mean a lot, and they continue to coach and push behind the scenes, and, you know, they're all successful away from hockey. And it was a tremendously strong group of women who were told their whole lives that girls shouldn't play hockey because they were a girl, you know? And so to fight through that and to play just simply for the love of the game, I think I'll be honest, when the first professional women's hockey league game is played in the WNHL, I will be in the stands with my daughter, and I will have ordered the largest beer I can potentially buy at the arena and get her the largest cotton candy or popcorn. And I will just sit in the stands and just watch that game. And it'll be, that's what it means. I think for those of us from that generation that have kids and always knew how important it was to encourage young girls to play hockey, that's what it'll be about. Like, it'll be a celebration that finally our daughters, our teammates' daughters can grow up aspiring to play in a true professional women's hockey league where they can make it just a modest living, an honest living, and have the infrastructure that surrounds them, you know, which currently doesn't exist. And I think that's another misperception about women's hockey. And even when I was part of the Canadian Women's Hockey League on the board, we weren't a professional league. We told everybody we were, but we weren't. You know, we still had issues, and we still, you know, we were really close, and we had great partners, and we had all amazing sponsors and great things happening, but we simply didn't have the infrastructure. We had like 2-3 full-time employees, and it's the same now. We do not have a professional women's hockey league, and we can sing it till the cows come home, but we don't have it. And so that's what people need to understand, that the PWHPA is fighting for is a true professional hockey league with the infrastructure, the marketing, and everything behind the scenes. And so that'll be an exciting day, Jeff. I'll have the biggest beer I can buy, and I know it'll probably cost me a small fortune, but that's what it's about for me, is my daughter and my teammates' daughters.
Every sip would be delicious of that one. You know, the one person, Cassie, that I might think of was the first person, I mean, I'm so young, I think I'm like 8 or maybe 9 years old, that really made me realize that girls can play hockey with the boys at that age and growing up, and can do things that we've been told they can't. And that's Justine Blaney. Like, I remember being in the MTHL when that was a big story, as Justine Blaney was trying to play in the MTHL, now GTHL. It's funny, because I think of Justine every now and then. I got to meet her in St. Louis at a NARCH tournament many years later, and had a wonderful couple of days together. But I think, Cassie, that might be the name that I think of right away, is Justine Blaney. Because she was the first one, Cassie. I know she might not be a household name for hockey fans, but she was the first one that opened my eyes as a young boy to exactly what you're talking about.
You know, it's funny, Jeff, you say that. I think I might get her a ticket. You know, I think she's definitely someone that, you know, her name isn't out there enough. And the interesting thing about Justine Blaney's story, and I remember growing up playing women's hockey as she was trying to fight this. And, you know, initially you're thinking, like, how good does she think she is? And why is she doing this? And, you know, and that's kind of what we were told. And the women's hockey associations within Ontario were fighting her. This is a young girl trying to play hockey. Yeah. And she's being fought by people who are supposed to be promoting women to play hockey, but because she's not playing with the girls, that's not good enough. And, you know, that was one thing that she had to fight, was not only did she have to fight the boys' associations, but then she had to fight the women's hockey associations and the women's hockey people. And I remember being told as a young player that, you know, it's not right if you play boys' hockey because of this, the game will never grow. Well, shouldn't we be encouraging all girls just to play, you know, and wherever they want to play, who cares, just as long as they can play. And she had to fight sort of both sides of the coin. And, You know what? That's something I'm going to write down in my little book of things to do is get her some tickets. I'm going to buy her some tickets to that first professional game because you're right. She was a huge part of it. And now she's a chiropractor in Brampton. And,
yes.
You know, she's just an amazing person and such a strong-willed person. And she deserves a lot of credit.
She runs her own wellness center. Stewie, go ahead.
So are there any players coming up in the system, or is there the next Cassie Campbell that we should be excited about?
Well, hopefully they're inspired to be a lot better than I was. And that's the thing, Anthony, like this generation coming up, I mean, there's no one in our generation that can even hold their hockey stick. I mean, they're so talented and they're so good. And, you know, they started training at such an earlier age and skill sessions at such an earlier age. And, you know, I'm back with our national women's program part-time, very part-time as an advisor. I started last year and that was the first thing for me. I was like, wow, like this is professional here. They like, and we were too, but it was just different. And, you know, Sarah Fillier comes to mind. She's a young player, plays NCAA, and she made her first world championship team this year. And so many players, you know, Blair Turnbull already been to her first Olympics, but a young leader coming into the program. And, you know, just so many terrific players coming up. And you watch the under-18 team, and the gap between under-18 and the development side is shrinking. And then the development side to the senior team is shrinking. And, you know, there's just so many great players coming up in our country and around the world. It's just growing and growing. And, you know, countries like Finland are able to keep their players through their prime years now by supporting them a lot better. And so that makes for a better game. And, you know, I just found out one of the greatest coaches I ever had, Thomas Pacina, is going to coach the women's Czech national team, which is going to take their program to a whole other level, too. So there are a lot of great things. You know, we often hear about Canada, U.S., and there's still 1-2, and there's still a big gap after that. But, you know, the game is really growing, and there's lots of great things happening. And, you know, Finland upsetting Canada last year at the World Championships, it's not fun to watch as a Canadian, but it was definitely really good for the game.
Justin?
So what is the schedule, the playing schedule? Like, all right, well, let's just assume COVID didn't exist or at least that things can get back to normal by this upcoming winter. What would the playing schedule look like for the best women's players in the game today?
You know, the PWHPA is run by Jane Hefford, who's a former teammate of mine, and I just saw an announcement that they did where they've now decided to be in 5 centers, which they feel is going to sort of be a little bit more beneficial to their top-end players in particular, where, you know, they're going to be best-on-best more often and I think play a lot more games. You know, they have NHL teams reaching out to them all the time saying, hey, how can we host games here? How can we host games here? Which is really exciting. And, you know, they weren't able to get off to the greatest of start last time because literally the Canadian Women's Hockey League folded. There was the World Championships. And then you were summer, and they had to turn that around within like 2-3 months and start a season. So there were some ups and downs last year, but I think it says a lot that the majority of those players are going back to be part of the PWHPA, and the best players from the NCAA are coming back home and retiring from their NCAA careers, and they're joining the PWHPA. So I think you're going to see a bit more elite level hockey, and you're going to see it probably more supported by NHL teams than it originally was in that first year, simply because of just the time constraints that they had to organize this all. But they have the support of so many great sponsors. The Billie Jean King Foundation is backing them and helping them, which is a huge thing. And you know, it's just going to be better and better this year. So I think you're going to see a lot more games in bigger centers with more fans, and they're just going to have more time to promote it.
Cassie, you're great, and we're out of time. Continued success with the Hall, with your Peloton rides. I'm paying attention. Don't worry.
Hey, do you have also a stationary bike?
I do. Elliot's got the Peloton. He's hardcore now, hey?
Okay, so I don't know about this. And so now I'm getting you and Elliot to do my ride with me.
I'll do it.
Okay.
I'll do it. I'm in.
I'll time you in to my ride. Okay, I have 2 rides coming up this week, one with the national team on Wednesday, one with Dave and Elaine Lowry on a Thursday.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. And then I'm on this. I'm emailing you and Elliot, and you guys are going to be my next ride.
Oh, boy, I'm going to get melted. This is going to be great.
That's okay.
Listen, best of luck with all that. Look forward to riding with you virtually. And also look forward to you getting that beer with your daughter, hopefully sooner than later, Cass.
Yeah, I think it's going to be sooner, which is going to be great.
fingers are crossed from everybody here. Thanks for always making time for us, Cassie. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Anthony. See you guys.
There she is, the one and only Cassie Campbell-Pascal. As much as we say that date is out there for women's hockey, there is also a plaque out there somewhere for Cassie Campbell in the Hockey Hall of Fame. We'll step away. More Hockey Central in moments. Darren McCarty joins us next. This is Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. I want to thank Cassie Campbell-Pascal for stopping by the show alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. I'm Jeff Merrick. Pleased to be joined now by one of our favorites, a wonderful person, a great personality in the game, a Stanley Cup champion, former Detroit Red Wing, Calgary Flame as well. He is Darren McCarty. Darren, thanks so much for joining us. How are you today?
Anytime, gentlemen. Excited as we get closer to what I like to call the two rounds of the first round of the playoffs coming up, right? Two first rounds of the playoffs, three of the five. Take you back to like Quebec Nordiques, Montreal Canadiens, pre-86, like a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
It's always exciting to talk hockey in June, especially when we're talking playoffs. And this is different for everybody, but even though my team's not in it, one of my teams, my cup winning team in Detroit, but I'll still cheer and I'm excited because it's going to be hockey. And what's the over under on overtime games, boys? That's the question.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, we all have our fingers crossed they can actually pull this off. But the today, the guys are, you know, phase two is underway now, and guys can get together with small groups and small training sessions. Look forward and fingers crossed for phases three and four. You did mention the opening round, and that always, I mean, that's always there in the rock and roll round. Like, that's just fun, and everything is wild, and, you know, it's like every shift is game seven. Like, from your point of view, I know a guy like you would love the opening round because it's just get out there and go, and it's sprint. Give us your thoughts on what that opening round is like as a player.
Well, you know what? It's different as a player than it is as a fan. Or if you've gotten through, your idea as a player is you want to get it over with as quick as possible, especially as, you know, being a part of the Detroit Red Wings, we always made the playoffs and you got experience each year and you knew like how deeper it went and how you had to prepare yourself. But you were just excited. And especially in Detroit, where we realized when the regular season wasn't the end goal, but that was just sort of the starting to prepare, and we were always talented enough or lucky enough to realize that and so we could prepare ourselves. But you're super stoked as a player, but you also too want to get it over with. Now as a fan or as a former player, it's so exciting because it's game, and it's a great opportunity to introduce people. And I think right now the NHL is capitalizing, and they've done it very well. I'm very outspoken about Gary Bettman when I think that he isn't doing a good job. But I think what he's done right now, not only for the benefit of the game, but for people and for hockey in general, is trying to get it done. So you said moving into the second phase, you see how they have the plans for the testing. They thought it all out. So I think it's just something that I'm proud to be an ex-NHL hockey player, and I'm excited to be a fan going into something where it's like playoff hockey first round on steroids. So hopefully, but again, guys, think if you got to think about this, because you always say you need good luck, you need to stay healthy, right, during the playoffs, and you need great goaltending, okay? So I think coming out of this, we'll really see that I think the team that stays the healthier will even more so be, you know, more apparent to move on in the playoffs. And in saying that, that could be one of those – hockey's a team that one of the – like Arizona at 11 coming out of the West. They could make some noise. So it'll be exciting, and that's the parody of the hockey Gary Bettman's put into it.
Great points. Stewie.
There's been a lot of discussion lately on how the players are going to stay in shape during this pause here. And one player that, if he was still playing today, wouldn't have any issues, and that's Chris Chelios. You had a chance to play with him. I actually trained with him in Los Angeles, and he was just a beast in the gym. So how big of a machine was he when he played with you in Detroit?
Well, dude, he's the Greek god. And I mean, the thing with Shelly is that he runs it as hard every which way, but he's Greek. So, he's seriously a Greek god. So don't try to emulate Kelly, but his work ethic and honestly, like, when we play alumni games or stuff like that, man, he's flying around. And we always kid that you can understand Yuri Fisher's career got cut short because of his heart issue. And he always, had something left. So he gets excited. But we always say between Chelios and Draper, they still are fighting for a tryout or something like that. But they could still play. So I think, Stewie, it's a little different nowadays because it's such 24/7 and the nutritionalists and the teams. I mean, I know in the Little Caesars arena where the wings, the kitchen area and the eating area is like unbelievable. I'm so mad and jealous about that. Walk in there and get fed all the time. That's nothing like that to worry about. So I think that guys are well prepared, as far as training and stuff. It's just about, and you can relate to this too. It's getting yourself in that hockey shape, getting the core and getting the legs and getting your legs under, getting your hockey timing back. So that'll be the interesting part is how long that takes.
Justin?
Darren, you're obviously not a guy who's light on personality. And I know coming from the hockey world and into the media side, one thing that frustrated me when I started doing radio was asking guys questions and being like, I know you have more to say than that. Like, give me something interesting. How have you enjoyed podcasting? Are you able to get out of your guests what you're hoping to get? What do you want to do with your own podcast?
Oh, absolutely, bro. So, start when people ask me Grind Time with Darren McCarty, which is my podcast, they say, what's that about? And I said, whatever I want. I'll come to we're at Hockey Central here right now, so we're talking hockey and we're on the radio, so I'm going to watch my mouth. But when we're doing Grind Time with Darren McCarty, we're talking about, music, about, cannabis, about hockey, about all sports, big NASCAR. So I do, and the whole thing is that what I respect is, and I always say enjoy my truth, is I think people respect is I'm the protector, so I can get some things out of guys, but never in a bad way. It's like if they want to offer it or understanding what questions to ask, and I guess it's just, it's because of the self-awareness of what I want to get out. I'm interested in people, and I want to know what make them tick. And if I ask, anybody else, and the thing that I've learned from the most successful people and success isn't monetary. It's people that love what they do, and it's everything. It's what you put in to get out. So bottom line is work hard at find something you love and work hard at it. And then it's easy. So the podcast is a lot of fun. Learn the media. I also got, I'm fortunate that the AM 760 WJR, I have a Friday night 7 to 8 o'clock show with Sean Belegian, who's a big hockey guy. And I always say I love him as my co-host because he saw me play junior, so he knows how great I was. And it all works out. So that's where you'll hear me talk more about Red Wings and get into it and argue with Drapes and because he's the director of, amateur scouting now. And it's just a great opportunity. I think my playing career and my relationship with the media, because of sort of just always being good, bad, or indifferent the way it is, has helped me now. So I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. I guess, Justin, to your question is, I just don't talk to those people that don't want to be like that.
Yeah.
Or I'll call them out. Or they know not to. Don't ask me a question or don't, something like this. But it's something that I make sure that if there's a subject that we're not going to talk about, and my stuff's all positive, right? We'll touch on the negative because we've all come from negative to get to positive, but I'm looking for the silver lining and the glasses half full and, letting people know that as long as you never quit, you're still in the game.
Belleville Bulls represent. Hey, Darren McCarty.
Hey, I'm more bitter that they moved than anything else. But Belleville Bulls represent, bro. You know it.
Let me ask you about that Wings team, Darren, with Darren McCarty, former NHL or Stanley Cup champion. I can only imagine what it would feel like. For me, it would be just overwhelmingly, perhaps intimidating. I don't know. But to walk into a room and you see Yzerman, Fedorov, Coffey, Larionov, Lidstrom, Vernon, Cicerelli, like, what, yeah, if you can describe, can you describe that feeling? I have no idea what that must feel like.
Well, you know, walking into training camp in my first year, so I was drafted in 92, and I got to work out here because I'm from Leamington, so I would come over all summer. So I got to get to know, you know, Dave Lewis was a coach and Barry Smith, and I got to know the guys a little bit. And so it wasn't, but it was, you know, it was awe-inspiring. I mean, I grew up a Wings fan and you know, watching Steve Yzerman. I always tell the story that, you know, you never got comfortable. It wasn't like a comfortability thing, but it was always like I knew that I could do something special and they needed that role. And thankfully, the stars aligned and Scotty Bowman came in and he saw, you know, something in me also that that I could add. And like I say, it's I'm all about, if you look at me, I'm about team or I'm about team goals. I fight for my teammates. You know, Stewie understands that. He did too. You know, we fight for our teammates or fight for a cause. And it was an honor to be able to watch these guys and learn from these guys and get razzed and picked on by these guys. You know, it was the greatest thing in the world. And then to earn their respect and then to watch, you know, and then to be able to, not only that, but to be delved in their lives with their families and their kids, and then to actually the brotherhood that forms, and then to win championships, and then it carries on to the day. So it's all about the culture. And that's why I say is that, like, the culture is back in Detroit because it all starts at the top and, you know, with Stevie there. And it's not when, it's when. So we got work to do, but at least I always use the analogy, at least we left the harbor at training camp and went out to the open water. We're not puddling around the harbor the whole time. So we're going places. It's just, it's going to take a while, but it's culture, and it's just like anything in the world. It starts at the top. So I was blessed. Scotty Bowman, you know, Steve Yzerman, Igor Larionov, Nick, you know, I can name, you want me to name all the Hall of Fame guys? I mean, it's crazy when you think back on it. You know, I'm just, it's just grateful. And it's one of those things that, you know, like 23 years ago, we won our first cup. And you know, I was fortunate to win four of them. But everyone has a story. And even more to this day, it's like, yeah, we're even tighter because of it. And you know, that's the best part is our relationships. And everybody's got their own relationships with everybody else. And it's not fake. And it's all true. And yeah, it's like the one thing is that, you know, here's the lesson I learned is that, and this doesn't have anything to do with marriage. This has to do with life. You're going to be somebody's biatch in this life. Now, who's biatch are you? I'm Steve Yzerman. So that's, you know what? That's pretty gosh darn good. Took me 3 years of stuff sucking my thumb and crying in the corner to realize he picked on me because he liked me, because he didn't talk to anybody that he didn't like. So, life lessons learned by D-Max sharing to everybody here on the Hockey Central.
That's an amazing answer. Stewie, I can't top that with a follow-up. Go.
Speaking of life lessons, we had the same junior coach who shared a lot of those away from the rinks, and Larry Mavity. How was it playing for Mav, who was old school, but he was a player's coach for sure.
But you understand that, though, right? Because, you know, there's a calm now. It wouldn't work today's game, but I learned so much just about maybe about being a man or about sucking it up and about, you know, the funniest story that I have, and I wrote in my book, My Last Fight, True Story of a Hockey Rockstar, is that we used to watch wrestling back in the day, right? And I remember you never have pregame skates, but for one reason he wanted to have a pregame skate at noon. Well, the wrestling show, because it was in Canada, went on to like 12:01. So there's like five of us watching the TV, and Mav came in there and he ripped the TV off the wall, threw it, and then in his rah, 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 and that was all swear words and whatever like that. And it was like, but it taught you a lesson, you know, like punctuality is one of those things, and it really helped in having to deal with Scotty Bowman later on. So I love Mav for everything. He made me, my last year, I won Player of the Year, and that's because I was either in the penalty box or on the ice, and I owe that to Larry Mavity.
That's awesome. Justin?
Darren, I like that you said that, you know, you keep your show positive and you're all about positive things. So I thought we'd try to keep it on that train for you and look back at your own career and just fill us in on someone who was a positive influence on your life or your career or a positive event along the way, something that was an important part of what makes you the man you are today.
Yeah, well, you know, let's start since we're talking hockey. That I learned Brian Drum, who was my junior B coach in Peterborough, where I got drafted from, where I moved away from home when I was like 16, and I got to play junior B and skate at the time when the Peets that year was like Ty Domi, Mike Ricci, Ross Wilson. They went to the, you know, Memorial Cup or whatever that year. Ricci set the league record with 19 consecutive goals or something like that. I remember, but Brian Drum told me that if you want to make it to the NHL, you have to do one thing better than 99.9% of people that play the game. And for me, he said, for you, it's going to play physical. So I just needed direction. And then the whole thing was, you'll never be a good enough skater to skate in the league. So what do? I get drafted to Belleville. That's got a ocean.
Huge.
And it's throwing the kid out there in the middle of Lake Erie and just say you're either gonna you're gonna learn, you're gonna survive. And the thing when I went to Belleville is Marty McSorley had been there. And trust me, when I would power skate and I would work on it because it looked like people would say, oh look, it looks like he's running on his skates. You know, like it was, so I worked with Laura Stam and I worked that hard, but I was always told that the thing that I always held to is Marty McSorley made it, and he was a worse skater than I was when it came to Belleville. So it was something that I always worked on. I go to summer schools. You know, another guy, Thomas Storm, when I was after we lost in 95 to Jersey in the finals and then 96 after we set the league record, Colorado. Both those years, I went to Sweden for a month and skated with 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds, and no – before you say that was nice to me being an NHL player, no, I was in the hockey camp with the 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds learning how to stick camp, you know, working on the skills. And I always said I'd do whatever it took. That was one of my entrance meeting things. Kenny Holland asked me, I said I'd do whatever it took to make it to the NHL. I'd do anything. So I was over in Sweden, and then it fast forwards to 97. You know, I'd be one guy one-on-one my whole career. It's all timing. I just did it for the Stanley Cup you know, clinching goal on a one-on-one move against Philadelphia, and poor Yanni Nienema, who's a good guy to this day. Yeah. You know, when they say it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, you know, no, it happened to a nice guy, but sorry, bud, it had to happen to somebody. So, I gotta fill you in on it, because if you want the goal, I beat Hextall, and I tell everybody I'm like a foot, I'm like a meter away from putting the puck in the net. And I said, you know why I scored? Because I said, please don't miss the net. And then I double pirouette. And who do I see coming? I'll tie it all around. Steve Yzerman, his eyes, the size of dinner saucers. Now, here's the guy that I grew up watching and who's the captain and looking at me going, what the heck was that? And me going, I don't know. And him and his pure, so you know, way looks at me, goes, girl, thank God you don't have to do it again. And you know, like that just put everything into that. And I read something. I saw an interview, and it's so poignant. It said, at that point when McCarty scored that goal, I knew we had to win. It was destiny to win the cup. So it worked out. But those are a few people that, you know, it's all about people that allow you to succeed or not, because it's not about whether you do or you don't. It's putting everything you got into it. If you put everything you have into it and you don't succeed, then it's not meant to be. But you can live with yourself, and that's, you know, sort of the lesson that the positivity that I want people to know. And I have the track record to show you the times I've fallen down, so you don't have to.
You know what? And further to that, we've only got about a minute and a half to finish up on this one. But I remember doing an interview with you, Darren. This is when I was hosting the old Hockey Night in Canada radio show on Sirius. And you said something to me that I think about a lot, and I've referenced it a number of different times. I remember saying to you, Darren, like, when did you hit rock bottom? And you stopped me and you said, Jeff, you never hit rock bottom. There's always lower you can go. All you can do is decide to stop digging. And I remember thinking how profound that was. Can you share your thoughts with that in the scant 60 seconds that we have in this? I just thought it was so brilliant, Darren.
You know what? And because I thought I'd been to rock bottom different times, and I think that what I always say, the one thing I on Grind Time, Darren McCarty, is no matter how many times you fall down, get your ass back up. And it's like, today could be the day to start. It's not about thinking about the past. The past is done. What are you going to do? If you want to change it, change it. And do not be afraid to ask for help. And trust me, you're not alone. Grind Time with Darren McCarty, reach out to me. I'll my life's an open book, but just continue the fight, boys. Just continue the fight.
You're a wonderful voice, a wonderful personality, and an important one as well, helping a lot of people already in your life and certainly more on the horizon. It's been a pleasure. Continued success with the podcast, and look forward to having you back here on the program sooner than later. Thanks for this, Darren.
Yeah, no, Justin and you guys, and bowl it up there, Stewie, bowl it up. And look forward to talking to you guys next time.
There you go. Take care. Thanks, Darren. Stanley Cup champion Darren McCarty. We are pressed against it. We hustle. We're back with more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan in moments.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, guys, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, and yours truly, Jeff Merrick. Just about 60 seconds here to wrap up another edition of Hockey Central. Takeaway time. Whether, Justin, it's Anthony Stewart's exploits on the trap bar, as told to us by Matt Nichol, whether it was that engaging conversation with Darren McCarty, your takeaway from today was?
That the women's hockey...
It was actually... Lost you for a sec.
Justin's going here. Stand down. You're going to get the last words, Duke.
It was actually Cassie Campbell-Pascal there discussing that there hasn't been a professional women's hockey league, which is quite the stance to take, and she sounds quite hopeful that women's hockey will get sorted out by the NHL. It sounds sooner than later, I thought.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, my daughter being a multi-sport athlete playing hockey and tennis, I know normally she'll gravitate towards the hockey game. I hope that there is a women's league eventually, professional league, where they can make a living, a suitable living, because it's Canada's game and hockey should be for everybody.
Amen to that. On behalf of our entire crew, I want to thank all of our guests for stopping by. Matt Nichol from Paragenix Systems kicked it off just after 12 o'clock Eastern. Rich Peverly, Dallas Stars Player Development Coordinator. Justin just mentioned Cassie Campbell-Pascal and Darren McCarty just moments ago. Thanks for joining us. Back tomorrow at noon.